The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Interesting one already come in from Jonathan, who says the slow advance of the Russian forces may not be a mistake on its behalf, but could be completely deliberate. I believe the aim is to force as many refugees into Western Europe as possible. Killing millions of people will not further the aims of Putin, but sending them out of the country alive to be cared for by his enemies will have a massive negative effect on those countries. In essence, he's delivering a double blow, taking over Ukraine and flooding Europe with millions of refugees. I believe that's his plan. Oh, it's an interesting take. Let's go first to the Polish town of Siemuszel, where Laura Marlow of the Irish Times is. Laura, that's a town bordering Ukraine, and I believe it's one of the main crossing points, is it, for people fleeing from Ukraine?
Yes. I mean, last time I looked, I'm losing track. It was over 700,000 have come into Poland, and almost all of them through that border crossing. And I think actually the person who tweeted that Putin's goal is to flood Europe with refugees. I talked to a military historian earlier today, and he said exactly the same thing. He said this is what the Russians do. They depopulate a territory that they want to seize, and then they colonize it with their own people. And he predicted, he said that the weather is helping Putin because the marshlands on some of his invasion routes are frozen at the moment. We get snow, a few flakes of snow every day. And so their armor can come in that way and drive people out. And he's driving them out with bombardments, moving in from the east and the north, from Belarus and from Russia. And they are fleeing. I mean, I was in the train station a little while ago. It was packed with people. It was packed with Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians were, some of them were buying tickets to other areas in Poland or elsewhere in Europe. And it was pretty much pandemonium. And at the same time, a lot of people are trying to get back into Ukraine. Young men want to get back into fight. But obviously a lot more people are leaving than are going back in.
And how quickly then can they move on when they get across the border?
It varies. The first I arrived on, I think it was Monday afternoon, and the area around the train station was absolutely packed with refugees who were not moving on. They were sleeping rough. They were sleeping in the train station. And the volunteers, there are thousands of volunteers from all over Poland who are flooding to this place to help these refugees. They get more organized every day. And for example, there has been a problem with the Asian, and by Asian, I mean Pakistani, Bangladeshi, subcontinent Asians, and Africans who were very numerous, who were studying in Ukraine. And so they're visible because of their skin color. And some of these sort of football hooligans in Siemuszel were following them around at night, harassing them. There's apparently a Facebook site where people are posting photographs of dark-skinned refugees. And the volunteers who were helping decided that now, instead of letting these refugees come into Siemuszel where they'll be targets, they're moving them on very, very quickly further north to other European countries. They're getting them out so that they won't be sitting ducks for attacks by these hooligans. So they are getting more efficient. There's a huge reception center just north of Medica, which is the border crossing, where, for example, there's a transport stand. And people, the Ukrainians, have the choice of going anywhere they want to. And they travel free on trains. And there are many, many Polish volunteers saying, I'll drive you to Gdansk, I'll drive you to Krakow, to Warsaw, where do you want to go? There are over a million Ukrainians already living in Poland. There are also many hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians living in Germany and France. A lot of the men do construction work. And so many of these refugees are going on to stay with relatives in other European countries.
They hope it'll be temporary, but it may not be temporary. What are all these people doing as well for food and drink and things like that? I mean, are they able to bring enough with them, get across the border quickly enough before they run out of food?
Well, the refugees have told me that they on the journey, that the big problem, there seem to be two big problems, the transport, because you've seen pictures of packed trains and packed buses, and a lot of the African students, for example, had to walk for dozens of kilometers. The transport is a problem, and I don't really understand the bureaucracy at the border. Apparently they have to sort of stamp everyone out, and even some of the Ukrainian women were waiting 4 or 5 days. I'm just standing at the border that long, and they arrive just completely depleted. But food and food and water do not seem to be problems. They told me that there were distributions by volunteers along the journey out of Ukraine, or up when they got up towards the border, and certainly when they arrive at the reception center, which is in a former Tesco supermarket parking lot. There was a vast array of food to eat. I mean, they were handed hot waffles the moment they stepped off the bus. There were huge vats of goulash and Polish specialities. You know, it smelled lovely, I must say, you know, cooking. And they're handed anything they want to eat or drink. They're bottles of their big packs of mineral water everywhere. So the Poles are actually taking very good care of them and treating them very well. And
good to hear.
Pardon?
That is very good to hear. Something else we've heard today, Laura, you've obviously left Paris to go there to the border of Poland and Ukraine. But reports that Putin today phoned President Macron and a 90-minute discussion in which it seems that Putin is just determined that he wants his own way, that he's not really interested in negotiating or pulling back in any way. You're a veteran of many war zones, and indeed you were with us here on The Last Word before Christmas talking about many of your experiences. What chances would you give the Ukrainian people who have been able to hold off the size of these Russian forces?
Well, you're right, Matt. The Elysee announced after that telephone conversation that Putin is determined to take all of Ukraine. Now, what I'm hearing here in Poland is quite different. The historian I mentioned, who I interviewed at great length earlier today, believes that Putin doesn't want the western half of Ukraine because he doesn't want to have to fight the resistance. And that the people in Western Ukraine, which was actually part of Poland for a very long time, are far more nationalistic and far more westernized, and they look towards Europe. They want to be part of Europe. And that he thinks that Putin wants the two main cities. He wants Kyiv, and he wants Kharkiv, which is under bombardment in the east, as you know, which is the second city. But he thinks that he'll just let the West go. And indeed, that seems to be sort of what is happening, that the embassies, for example, have fled to Lviv in the West. And so he believes there'll be partition. And partition is the thing I hear over and over here in Poland. So who knows? I mean, I don't know. Maybe Macron's right. Maybe he'll take all of Ukraine. But I think it would be a lot for him to handle because the Ukrainians are fighting. You've seen that. And I'm not sure he wants all of it. He may just want, what he calls, or what Russian ideology of a great Russia calls, they call Ukraine small Russia. So they would have big Russia, which is Moscow and Russia as it stands today, small Russia, which is Ukraine and Belarus. And when you combine those three countries, you get Russia, and that's what Putin wants. I think the experts here on the ground probably know a little bit more about what's going on in Putin's brain than Macron does, but I could be wrong.
Laura Marlow of the Irish Times, thank you so much for joining us. Stay safe. We're joined now by your Irish Times colleague, Naomi O'Leary, European correspondent of the newspaper. And Naomi, there has been a development today in relation to the refugee status of people of Ukraine amongst the 27 member states. What's happening, please?
That's right. There's been agreement among the EU member states that for the first time ever, a temporary protection directive will be triggered. And what that means is that all Ukrainian citizens who are living in Ukraine, all also permanent legal residents of Ukraine, will be granted a special status. And it will allow them to live and work in EU countries, to have access to housing and healthcare for a period of 1 year that can be extended up to 3 years. This was a rule, I suppose, that was ready, that was actually designed and created in 2001 in the wake of the Balkan Wars, but it was never actually used. It's the first time that it's been triggered, and it's, you know, it's to deal with what we expect to be one of the worst ever, you know, refugee challenges. And what we expect is that EU countries may decide to share out the responsibility for welcoming people according to the size of their own population, which would mean that Ireland would get about 2% of the refugees. That may be a very large number, because the United Nations Refugee Agency has said already 1 million people have fled, and they've warned that that could be 4 million. But these are rough estimates. We don't know.
And we know we have a housing shortage here in Ireland. What about throughout continental Europe? Where are these people going to be looked after?
Many European countries have emergency refugee accommodation facilities purpose-built. They are all over Germany. Germany, you know, for example, accommodated an enormous number of refugees in the middle of the Syrian civil war, as many as 1 million. Also, the Netherlands has taken in many, has processed many. So there is capacity. I don't think anyone, though, is expecting that this is going to be a walk in the park. It's going to require enormous logistical organisation. You know, I believe that officials, as we speak, are working out, OK, where are we going to put people? How are we going to do this? You know, it's going to probably involve ordinary people offering to house people in their homes. Remember that, yeah, there is a housing shortage. At the same time, lots of homes stand empty. So it's a case of organisation and political will, and something that, you know, I think what governments here have been saying is that they are determined to do this because Ukraine has been invaded.
Yes.
This is a symbol of the solidarity they feel with Ukrainians and a will to help them.
And then finally, Naomi, that solidarity has manifested itself in the imposition of sanctions and the targeting of oligarchs. Is there any suggestion that there might be even further sanctions economically to try and put an even bigger squeeze on Russia?
The sanctions that have been put in place or just being legally finalised at the moment are extremely profound. They isolate Russia's economy to an extent that's never been done to any country. They've frozen the ability of the Russian central bank to access its reserves overseas. This is called the ruble. It caused the ruble to tank. You know, shares are trading at rock bottom. They've actually suspended shares in many Russian companies listed on the London Stock Exchange. Russians are expecting not to be able to access things like Apple products. The kind of lifestyles that they have been used to have just been abruptly ended overnight by the decision of the dictator who rules there. So, you know, this is going to have a profound effect throughout Russia that will be felt. I think that the opinion, I suppose, among EU leaders here is that the manner of Putin's life, his isolated, you know, extremely wealthy, extremely closeted existence that he lives, it'll take a long time for him to feel that. But what the hope is that economic warfare, I suppose, will cause the people around him to turn against him. That's the hope. And also, you know, to get through to the Russian people the reality of what's happening and break through the stranglehold that state-controlled media has. And there may be further sanctions. Certainly, they've been adding more. Belarus had additional sanctions today on things like potash. They're already under lots of sanctions, but this was closing off what was seen as a bit of a loophole. And they may do more like that. They may tidy up more loopholes. They could add additional banks to the list that are banned from SWIFT, the international payment system, for example. There's lots of tweaks and tidying up they could do. But what I'm hearing is that for now, what they want to do is focus on really implementing what they've already decided, kind of consolidating that, because now it's a question of enforcement. You've seen authorities in France and Germany seizing the mega yachts, the motorboats that belong to oligarchs that have been sanctioned. So now it's a case of hunting down those assets, which are hard to find. They're hidden behind shell companies. They're in cryptocurrencies. It's a real reckoning with the extent of secrecy
Indeed.
In our financial system.
We will be discussing that with Bill Browder in the next hour. So for now, Naomi O'Leary, Europe correspondent of the Irish Times, thank you for joining us here in The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.